He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? Welcome, everybody, to the Lakers Lounge. I'm Anthony Irwin, as always, joined here on, by the time you guys are listening to this, the best day of the week, your favorite day of the week. Aaron Larsoul is on the other line here. We are going to be talking about last night's game. We are going to be talking about the Warriors in that series.
We are going to be talking about Wednesday night's game.
Yeah, Wednesday night's game, just a lot of commiserating. And you know, I think there's some strategic stuff to talk about, too. But I really think, like, when we talk about the game, that we may as well just dive into it.
Okay.
Like, we could talk about strategy. We can talk about counters to counters and the things that Memphis did differently in that one and the ways that the Lakers have to defend Memphis without Ja and all of that stuff. We can discuss that till the cows come home. But really, like, it starts with give a fuck, right? It starts yes. with give a bleep. And
wait, why did you say give a fuck once and then the second time said give a bleep?
Well, you know, just in case like a kid was not paying attention
and then 4 seconds
thought they
later.
Heard what they maybe okay. thought right. they heard, and then I went with bleep.
All right, well then I ruined it.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, look, I think about the kids. You don't have kids. You don't have to think about the kids. So, so yeah. Like, I don't know. I want to just start. You know, and I know that this is a path that leads down to, you know, a lot of criticism and stuff. And I think the Lakers deserve it. I think Anthony Davis first and foremost deserves it. Because of his offensive. On the offensive side of the ball and generally offensive approach to that game. Like I just didn't think that the Lakers coming in were going to offer up the kind of desperation that they knew they were going to face against Memphis. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, part of what makes it so annoying is that you knew it was coming. The Lakers this year, given any opportunity to mess around, they have, and they did again in game two.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. The Lakers have not strung together a large stretch of games where the requisite mental focus and effort has been there. The Lakers have played hard all year, and credit to Darvinham for keeping them playing hard. Like, I think part of it is it's not just playing hard. Part of it is like holding the rope with your mental focus.
Yeah.
And there have not been a large stretch of games where the Lakers have been able to do that, especially Claire MPLS on mm-hmm. Twitter, who made a good point about like, and actually Harrison made this point too in the Slack that I don't participate in anymore, but that like the one thing they were sure of after game one was the Lakers were not going to come out with the requisite yep. energy, focus, etc. But I don't think this is a Lakers issue. I think it's more of an NBA issue, a human nature issue, and a playoff issue. And I say this all the time. True says this all the time. Also, you can't fake desperate. And this is why playoff series tend to go back and forth. Because you cannot fake desperation. It's human nature. You can try to rile it up. It doesn't mean you're automatically going to lose. But the truth of the matter is the Lakers, and it's not Lakers specifically, but any road team coming in for the first two games as the lower seed, you feel like you've done your job. If you split, you feel like you've done your job. You've taken home mm-hmm. court. So I don't think it's a Lakers thing specifically. And from Memphis's perspective, yes, you can do some rallying around Ja, like for one game here or there. And the Lakers have had problems coming with the requisite energy and effort and focus against teams that they just felt were inferior. Teams that didn't have all their guys that were hurt. Some of that's human nature in the NBA also, but I think it's had more to do with kind of the way that human nature affects playoff series. If Memphis comes in, like, no matter what anybody says, right? No matter what Darvin says, no matter what LeBron says, the Lakers did their job. And so that naturally you're going to have your take your foot off the gas. And from Memphis's perspective, if they don't win yesterday, their season's over. So Memphis's desperation shone through, and the Lakers didn't match it until it was too late.
So here's another way that I'll put it. I think you and I agree that the Lakers are good, right? I think we agree that the Lakers are a good basketball team.
Not very flawed. Flawed, but good, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I think that we can say that about every NBA team. There isn't a great team out there, right? And the Lakers very much fall into that category of good.
There's two in the East that are
great? No, I don't see.
Well, great. I mean, what are we, like, great compared to whom?
Great.
I think there are two.
I think there are really good teams, but I don't think there's a great team. I don't think there's a buzzsaw.
Boston and Milwaukee do not have, like, as many obvious flaws as everybody. That's fine. Else.
But I still don't think like great. Great to me is like the 16-1 Lakers, right? The Lakers
and
that
the LeBron Heat and the 0-1 Laker. No, no.
Yeah.
Of course not.
That's more what I mean. And like good teams, the 16-1 Lakers, and actually, like, one of the things that I don't think Phil Jackson gets enough credit for is his record in elimination games. Like, when the other
15-1, by the way.
Yeah, when the other team played,
there was a 5-game series in the first round in those days. 15.
Yeah. Are you sure?
Yeah. 15.
Oh yeah, it was 15-1. All right, fine. But like the Phil Jackson era, like, if he had an opportunity to knock a team out, if he saw an opportunity to, you know, like, seize the control of a series and end that shit ASAP. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, his teams did just that. Like, he really found a way to hammer into his teams the importance of taking advantage of opportunities over the course of the playoffs so that you don't have to expend extra energy and therefore have it when you're going to need it more.
Sure.
And like, you know, that 15-1 Lakers team, that 0-1 Lakers team, those were not like bad teams that they were sweeping through, right? Like,
no, but like, I think we're being a little.
That West was
like,
loaded.
But hold on. That was the best team in the NBA and was more talented than everybody else.
My point. That's my point.
Two most dominant guys in the league, probably.
That's my point. My point, though, is that, like, this team, good, not great.
Like, the this team. Seed.
Well, sure, but like. I guess the reason I'm saying all of this is so that, like, you know, the next time that, like, a great team beats the crap out of Memphis there, beats the crap out of them two more times, and gets out of the first round here easily.
Yeah.
Like, I think the closest thing to a great team in the Western Conference is Denver. You see what they're doing
Denver's looked good the last two, yes, in their first.
Yeah,
two games,
and like they see an opportunity here. They see a Minnesota team. They see, you know, Karl Anthony Towns. Essentially, you know,
taking two shots in the first half,
cosplaying as Danilo Gallinari, and they're like, "All right,
that's funny. I like cool. that. That's
cool. Funny. We're gonna go ahead and beat the shit out of you. We're gonna
not
get out
even,
of this first
Danilo,
round.
You see, Danilo get him up.
So yeah, right. Even. That's true. Yeah, he's a shy Danilo Gallinari.
No, you know, it was right there. It was Andrea Bargnani. It was right there, and you didn't get it.
Right. Yeah, right. But, like, I just, you know, and part of this, I think I was hoping that the Lakers would prove me wrong and that, like, I could reset my expectations here. But I think my macro takeaway from game two is they're not there. They're not there at that, like,
they're not
good.
The 2022-23 Lakers are not at the level of the 2000-2001 Lakers or 2001-2002.
No. I'm saying that, like,
even relative to the
league. We knew that wasn't going to be the case. Like, that is a step too far. But had they won, like, had they showed up and beat an extremely shorthanded Memphis team, albeit on the road, mm-hmm. then I think you could kind of recalibrate your expectations and start to say like, oh, all right, this is a much more serious team than we thought. But no, like we saw them show up the way that they did, and I think we can still kind of look at them as, all right, they're good, they're pretty good to good, and still unserious, and still not as serious as they need to be.
Yeah, I think that part of this, and you've watched the NBA not as long as I have, but a very, very long time, and this is just how the playoffs go. Like,
yeah.
Like, right? Miami won game one with Giannis playing some of it, and then came back for game two without Giannis, and we're down like 178 points in the first half. This is just how these things go without mm-hmm. Giannis, right? This is how the playoffs go. It ebbs and flows. It goes up and down because the number one rule is you can't fake desperate.
But you can try to match it. I think
that's one rule. That's one thing. That's like one tenet of the playoffs. The other one is like the series doesn't start until the road team wins a game.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the Lakers did that. And so naturally you are going to take your foot off the gas. It is human nature. I agree that it was disappointing yesterday. I did like some of the fight in the second half to get it back to like, maybe there's a chance.
6 points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some of that's like a positive thing too. I think the Lakers should be concerned that AD basically got his ass kicked by Xavier Tillman. That mm-hmm. is concerning. I mean, there are things to be concerned about. D'Lo, somebody on Twitter was looking up a stat. D'Lo may be the worst field goal percentage shooter in playoff history. Maybe
getting close.
So I think there's some concern about D'Lo. I said this on Twitter last night. If Ja is unable to go, I told you he wasn't going to play before. He mm-hmm. was not going to play. If on Saturday he's not able to go, I would start Rui in Vando's place because Vando doesn't have anybody specifically to guard. He's much better on the perimeter, but he doesn't have anybody specifically to guard. And if you start him and say he's going to guard Tyus as he did yesterday, 2 days ago, as you listen to this, or he's going to guard Bane, then I don't know who D'Lo and Austin guard. So that's a problem. So because he doesn't have anybody, like he can guard bigger guys, but that is not his specific, like
yeah.
him being a 4-5 on defense is not really a thing.
Yeah, he's more 3-4.
I've compared him to Kuz in that respect before. And on offense, because Anthony Davis is not a threat shooting the ball really. And nobody's worried about him. If he drifts out to the corner, he's going to do most of his work from, you know, 16 feet in. That doesn't give Vando a spot offensively other than just stand in the corner. And he's not a dangerous shooter, so nobody cares. Mm-hmm. So I think that so if you're going to have Vando guard a big guy, which I think you have to without Ja, I think you may as well just start Rui because mm-hmm. especially because he's been great the first two games. And I think the little bit less you get on defense from Rui in those kind of matchups is completely offset by the fact that Rui is X number of times better on offense. So
yeah,
I would start. That would be the adjustment I would make. I would, if assuming Ja is not going to play, because if Ja plays, I definitely want Vando guarding him. But
yeah,
assuming Ja doesn't play, the first thing I would do is I think Rui has to start in Vando's place.
So Raj pushed back on this a little bit, and I understand why people would push back on this when you hear it out loud. But I actually think that the Grizzlies are a better matchup, not a better team, but a better matchup for the Lakers without Ja than they are with him.
Okay.
I what concerns me, if I was a Memphis fan and Ja was getting ready to play against these Lakers, what would concern me about the matchup is that like all of his work is inside out, right? He gets into the paint and he has a great floater game and he's great at getting to the basket, finishing at the basket. You know, he collapses defense and all of that stuff. But like, because he's such a questionable shooter, AD can play deep drop and, you know, become kind of implode the paint.
He had 25 in the third quarter. at crypto right in front of me because AD was playing a deep drop.
Yeah, but I think like he was playing a deep drop and the Lakers were also going over the top of it. And that was presenting too much space on the other side of the screen. Right. I think if you go deep drop there with AD and you have, you know, when you go into a deep drop, that's going to create a natural channel for the defender to slip under the screen.
I want to create a canal. I like that better.
A canal.
Venice, California and Venice, Italy.
Yeah. But Ja, incredible player, one of the most exciting players in the NBA, all that stuff. And Memphis is a better team, more explosive team with him out there. Yes. But the fact that Bain and the fact that Tyus force AD to come and show up a little higher makes the Lakers weaker on the backside and makes them weaker in the paint. And I think like AD against a Jaw team fits perfectly. But you know, when you stretch out AD and the Lakers are kind of weak on the backside there, that's where I think those guys present a tougher matchup for the Lakers defensively than Jaw does. And also like when Jaw isn't out there, like we just talked about a second ago, the Lakers' best perimeter defender is Jared Vanderbilt. You don't have a real use for him in the same way. So that makes it tougher as well. I kind of wonder if we'll get more Vando Rui minutes so that Vando can match up against Bain or can match up against against Tyus or whatever, and you have more of a purpose for Vando being out there. But yeah, as of right now, I kind of wonder if Memphis is a little bit more dynamic, a little bit more. It is a tougher matchup for the Lakers without Ja than with him, especially a lessened Ja, like a Ja with a hurt wrist.
No.
Okay.
Do you want me to expound? No. Next question. No. I mean, been good. They have been good this year, and they were good last year without him. Tyus.
They're also worse defensively with Ja. Like Ja is correct. Not a good defensive player.
Correct. Tyus isn't either, but he's better than Ja.
Yeah.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I think the other problem. I've been clamoring for LeBron to guard Dylan Brooks. I said it in here, I think, last week before the series started. And that's still what I would do. It hasn't happened yet. Excuse me. It hasn't happened yet, but that's still what I would do. And so for me, it would be Austin. Yeah. So I would put D'Lo on Tyus. I would put Austin on Desmond Bane.
That's what we've seen mostly.
I would put LeBron on Dylan Brooks, which he has not been. And I would put Rui. This is going to sound counterintuitive. I think I would put Rui on Triple J because like if Triple J is going to, he was kind of backing down LeBron, but if he's going to come with all those dribbles, if you're going to make him put it on the ground 9-10 times,
if it's like a 7 or 8 second help, possession. Yeah.
I don't want AD on him because I want AD to be able to roam and beat up every shot that as he's done the last two games. So I would put him on Tillman, although Tillman ate his lunch Wednesday. But I don't like if you're going to do that again, Xavier Tillman, like kind of the Memphis's approach to Rui, like Rui, if you're going to make 5 threes, then like we lose. Mm-hmm. So if Xavier Tillman can do that to AD again, the Lakers probably lose. So yeah. I would put that so he could roam a little bit. He can be a doubler. I think the Lakers have done a bad job. They've overhelped quite a bit. But that's one of the reasons I want LeBron on Dylan Brooks, because that plays into LeBron's bad habit of wandering away from shooters and overhelping when it's not necessary. And kind of being inattentive because I want Dylan Brooks to shoot. Like, go ahead. And that's the other part of it that, look, Dylan Brooks has no conscience anyway. He has 100% no conscience when Ja is not there. When Ja is there, he has 95% no conscience. So I think that is one of the other things that harms Memphis without Ja is it empowers Dylan Brooks, and that is not something that they should want.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I just think, you know, especially a lesson, because I didn't think that, like, this is going to sound crazy again, but like Jaw bringing up the ball and going into the pick and roll made me a lot less nervous than down the stretch of last night's game, when like all Memphis kept on doing was get the ball either to whoever Russell was guarding and putting him in the pick and roll, or setting a pick first before you get into the actual pick and roll to force D'Angelo Russell to guard in the pick and roll. Schroeder didn't play well yesterday, so they went with Russell instead, who also didn't play very well. You had to choose between those two guys, and I just think like those guys picking on D'Angelo Russell and forcing AD to come up, or you know whoever is guarding the screener, usually AD, to come up and pull him away from the paint. Not necessarily. I think the Lakers did this with Jaren Jackson Jr. in game one. The Lakers, you know, they kept on running pick and rolls to Jaren Jackson Jr. to get him out of the paint. And he kept on going into deep drop, and Austin Reeves was able to pick that apart. In both cases, on both sides of the ball, AD was coming up a little higher, and Jackson on Memphis' side was coming up a little higher. It just so happens, though, that Memphis was able to execute better than the Lakers when that advantage in the paint was created. And you know, that I think was kind of, if you want to look at like beyond the give a bleep in game one, if you want to look like tactically speaking, the difference to me was that Memphis was able to take advantage of the issues that they were creating by pulling AD out of the paint. Then the Lakers were able to take advantage of getting Jaren Jackson Jr. out of the paint.
Yeah, I think the other big thing was, especially in the fourth quarter, the Lakers were battling the shot clock over and over and over. It was throw the ball to LeBron. It was walk it up, first of all. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, now you've already cut 6 seconds off or something, 6 to 8 seconds off. And then it was mid-post or wing touch for LeBron. And it was kind of LeBron going through a bunch of stuff with nobody moving. And then with a couple seconds left, Vando cuts to the paint. LeBron threads it to him. Vando either doesn't catch it or gets his shot beat doesn't up finish. or doesn't have a lane to finish and kind of has to kick it out to somebody. And then you're fighting the shot clock. So I think we could see, you said there's a choice. Like D'Lo was bad. D'Lo was awful. Dennis wasn't any good either. He had as many points as you and I did. And you said you have to make a bad choice.
Did you score? Because I didn't score.
No, I didn't have. I had none.
Me neither. Yeah, I had an off night.
Wait, no, I did score. Oh, you mean in the game? Okay. you mean basketball? Yeah, sorry. No, I had no points. I had no points in that contest. So I think what you can see, and look, LeBron has not looked 100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this series. And he's deferred a lot more than you would expect him to. But I still believe that if you have LeBron and Austin, that is enough creation. So you may not have to choose between D'Lo and Dennis if they're not playing well in a closing lineup. You asked for some Vando and Rui time. I think Austin, Vando, Rui, LeBron, and AD is possible. I think you could substitute, as bad as he's been, I think you could substitute Beasley for one of Rui or Vando and get some offensively spacing. Get some spacing too, because that's the problem. Like Vando has nowhere to stand.
Yeah.
And then he gets in the lane and it's all clogged up because there's no spacing and he is not a good playmaker to begin with. So
not a good finisher.
No. So, I think there will be some lineup differences, but going back to your job point, the other reason why he matters so much to Memphis is because you were talking about their half-court offense. They're bad. Their half-court offense is bad. Mm-hmm. And that was with their best screener, Steven Adams, and he's not available. So Tyus just walks the ball up. Tyus is not trying to run. Yeah. Dylan Brooks does a little bit. Bain doesn't. So I think preventing
Jaw keeps you out of
preventing them from getting out in transition because Ja is out, I think that's a huge loss for them because their half-court offense just isn't any good. And frankly, it wasn't any good Wednesday either.
Yeah, they only scored 103 points, you know.
Yeah.
It was the Lakers' issues there were on the offensive side of the ball than on the defensive.
Yeah.
Regarding that, though, you know, it was interesting to see Memphis essentially say, all right, we're not going to get beat in drop coverage again. They did a lot more switching, and it forced the Lakers to throw the ball over the top of their defense.
They went under on Austin screens.
Yeah, and it forced the Lakers basically to throw these lob passes into AD, which, yeah, he got the ball in dangerous spots, but it took the ball a long time to get there because it's a high arcing pass. And by the time the ball got there, and especially with the way that AD was catching it and assuming the fetal position, the Lakers weren't able to take advantage of those advantageous spots that he was catching the ball. One hand, this is a matter of AD, stand your ground, hold, like keep the ball up high and finish quickly, and don't allow yourself to get triple teamed underneath the basket and shoved off of your spot. I know Lakers fans are going to whine and say like he was out physical and physical bordering on illegal, right? And that there should have been more calls and that AD only shooting 4 free throws is a travesty. And to that, I would say like in the playoffs, if you're already getting moved off of your spot, you're not going to get the call.
His first two shots were 16-foot fadeaways. So
yeah,
like that spoke to me immediately, like, all right, at least offensively, because AD was really good defensively.
Yeah.
But at least offensively, I was like,
yeah. Then he gets blocked by Conchar and like he gets into these modes for whatever reason where he just doesn't jump offensively. Like he wants the ball to get as low over the, like if he's going to dunk it, it's going to be these like kind of rim grazers when he is more than capable of getting elbow above the rim and throwing it down with force. And for whatever reason, he'll have these games where he'll just kind of either lay the ball up and creep it over the rim before, you know, when it hits the backboard, or, you know, on his dunks, even it'll barely get above the rim. And like even last night, he missed a dunk, like he missed a putback, I think, because of his weird like tendency in that one to not want to get his feet underneath him fully and elevate. So like part of this is just AD needs to play better. Like that's just it. Like there's no other way around it.
Yeah.
X's and O's don't matter. AD,
I agree,
needs to buck up. But also, like, you know, is there, do you think there's anything that the Lakers can do to allow him to play better?
No.
Yeah.
Like offensively, no.
I'm because with you.
No. I think
you're still catching the ball in great spots.
Yeah.
Like,
I didn't like the fourth quarter from, I'm going to say LeBron because LeBron was holding the ball too much, but I think LeBron felt like, I don't know if we have any great options here. So this is what it's going to be. I think I'm the best option, even though I thought LeBron was holding the ball too long, but no, I do think it was just kind of AD needs to force the issue more. And as I said, like his first couple possessions were him just like fading away and shooting fallaway jumpers against guys that shouldn't be able to guard him. So I think this was more just, and he said so. He said as much after the
game. He always does. That's part of what's annoying.
You're correct. Anyway. He does. That does happen a lot. You're correct.
I also, like, really quickly before we move off of this one, and I do, like, I look, the Lakers can't fake desperation when they're going up against it in Memphis, but now the Lakers have to be the desperate team, right? The Lakers, if they lose either of these next two games,
not necessarily. I did like,
yeah.
Now you kind of get back to now you get back to square one, and the Lakers have home court advantage.
Sure, yeah, but I'm saying like the Lakers can't give home court advantage right back. If they give it back, they don't. They do not win this series. Like if they lose either of these two games at home, they do not win this series. I think I can say that pretty staunchly. I think.
Okay.
Now, I know a lot of people are kind of wondering, because the Lakers are getting out physical, like the Lakers do have a big body sitting over there on the bench who has not played yet in the series in Mo Bamba. And to those people, I would say he's not the answer.
I don't. I have nothing. I have no further questions, Your Honor.
Like I know that, you know, he was this late season, or not late season, but like, you know, deadline acquisition, and that conceptually he does fit a lot of the things that the Lakers kind of need, size, and he is size that can theoretically space the floor. But like, the thing I'll say about Bamba, and this is going to sound harsh, but it just kind of is, he is a lot more the concept of a player than he is the realization of that concept. That's why he was available from Orlando. That's why Bol Bol had kind of edged him out of the rotation. That's why Orlando, before this last season, I think they gave up their rights to him. Like before they re-signed him. Like he was an unrestricted free agent, and then he became restricted.
Yes,
and he still
made a non-guarantee. Yes.
Yeah, and then they gave him a non-guaranteed deal. And like, look, part of the value that, you know, Pete has kind of mentioned this, I don't know if you can speak to it more definitively, but like, part of what Bamba's value is at the deadline is that he has kind of a later guarantee date in this offseason than usual, and that makes him more valuable a trade asset. But in terms of him, the player right now, it's tough. The Lakers traded for him, and normally he would get his reps in the month or so before the playoffs. Unfortunately, he sprained his ankle, didn't get any of those reps, and Ham isn't going to trust him as a result of that. And even still, like even before he sprained his ankle, I didn't see anything from him that I would be like, oh yeah, he's what the Lakers need in this series.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Yes. I agree. I mean, I think he's good enough to, like, if Steven Adams was available for Memphis, I think, like, he's good enough to play 8 minutes or something. But there isn't a need for a big body. Like, Anthony Davis is fine. LeBron and Rui are big enough. Like, to go against Jaren Jackson Jr. and Xavier Tillman and Santi Aldama, the Lakers are big enough.
Yeah.
And the ways in which they have seemed not big enough is an effort thing. And I think that it's a player thing. It's not that they aren't, it's that they haven't played up to that level yet. The Lakers didn't look too small in game one.
Yeah.
They looked, I mean, although Jaren Jackson Jr. was great in game one, but they didn't look too small. They looked too small yesterday, but you're going to look too small even against smaller guys if you're getting punked. If you're not, like, again, desperation has a very distinct smell and it cannot be faked.
Yeah. All right.
Have I ever told you that I hate the sneakers app?
No, but most people do.
I hate the sneakers.
So app. let's wrap up here on a nice cheerier subject here.
Oh, I'm going to love this one, right?
You know, this being a new iteration of The Hook, you and I do like to wander around the league a little bit.
Yes.
And the, I think, biggest, loudest, certainly, story in the NBA is Draymond Green's suspension. I didn't think, like I said on the lowdown after that game, I didn't think he would get suspended. I thought the league would kind of look at the ejection from that game and the loss that resulted from that ejection as enough.
They had a one when he left. After he left, I think the Kings shot 75% from the field and had like a 156 offensive rating
in
the whatever 6-7 minutes that he was out.
I think you and I are probably on the same page in thinking that he wasn't going to get ejected. This was kind
suspended.
Of suspended. Yeah, suspended. Ejected certainly, but suspended. And then this was kind of interesting because the league talked about his reputation playing a role in his suspension.
Yes.
Adam Silver was there in the building as he exits and he's like showing zero remorse for having bruised the sternum of his counterpart on the court.
Did he really bruise his sternum?
I don't know. According to the Kings, he did. Hey, it's smart of the Kings,
by
the Kings,
way. Yeah, the Kings are reliable narrators.
Kings did really good, I thought, like with releasing that information. Like, they handled that well.
Absolutely.
It's kind of like players, LeBron does this really well, where he'll like get glance in the face and he'll go to the floor and he'll force the NBA, the referees to look to see if it was a flagrant foul. It was like the Kings basically did that with Domas's injury. But I don't know. The whole, like, should he, shouldn't he have been suspended thing, like, I guess we could talk about that. But what I find interesting here is more macro as it pertains to the Warriors. And on one hand, they don't have this run. They don't have this dynasty without what Draymond Green brings to the table. He's maybe the most unique defensive presence that the league has ever seen. Really helped change the way the defense is played.
He is the best defensive player of this generation and maybe the most unique defender ever, yes.
And yet, his antics cost them a championship against LeBron and now might end this run potentially prematurely. Like, what do you do on the math there? Like, do you, it's a net positive because they've still won their championships.
They won four championships. You ride with
them.
And you know what? It's kind of like Steph also. Like,
Steph is stomping on people? That would be fun.
The way that Steph plays offense.
If Steph could stomp on somebody, who would he have stomped on over the course of his career?
Kendrick Perkins. He got into it with Kendrick Perkins. Like, Kendrick told Kendrick Perkins, you don't play, basically. That's why on ESPN he calls him.
Would it be James Harden?
The light skinned dude with the green eyes, I think is what he calls him. You know, maybe his brother. He'd probably step on Seth, you know, just from some old harbored ill feelings from the driveway.
You got to Duke because I was great at Davidson.
The driveway in 1992, somewhere in Charlotte, or maybe they were in Toronto then. You ride with it. Because so the thing with Steph, the comparison I'm going to make is like Steph is loose with the ball and Steph turns the ball over.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't just, part of that is inherent in how he plays. And you can't just like remove that and still get the greatness. Like, it's like a gunslinger quarterback, right? Like he's going to throw some picks, but you can't just eliminate the parts of it that you don't like and just keep the parts that you do like. It doesn't work that way. So Draymond is on the edge. Basically always.
Yeah.
He's over the edge often.
Yeah.
But you don't get all of that other stuff without him living on the edge like that. And sometimes it boils over, and it did on whatever Monday. Sometimes it boils over. But you can't neuter him in that way. You can't take that away and still want all that defensive intensity. And frankly, the Warriors don't have that otherwise, and they haven't had it. They're a bunch of Steph Curry is the boogeyman, and he's a killer, right? And Klay Thompson is as competitive as anyone in the league. But they are seen as soft. They are seen as nice. They are seen as finesse, and Draymond is the enforcer.
They don't get after it defensively.
This year they don't. They did before. That was always the secret to the Warriors' success was they're going to keep scoring. And at some point, you're going to have 6 minutes where you don't score. The Warriors will just turn your water off, and you won't score, and the Warriors still will, and you lose. So I don't know.
But that wasn't because of Steph. Like, that was Andre Iguodala. That was Draymond Green. That was Kevin Durant the one year.
That was Clay. Yeah. Wiggins. That was GP last year.
Clay is a great defender. Too.
Yeah, he was. But he's not anymore. He was.
Yeah.
No, but Steph turned himself from a guy that you could pick on all the time to slightly above average. And plays well in the scheme and has built his body up enough so you can't just punk him anymore. So I think the Warriors just have to ride with this. Like, you don't get the good Draymond without the bad Draymond. And without the good Draymond, none of this happens. Draymond is as unique. Like, what the Warriors do on defense, it's all Draymond. Just like what the Warriors do on offense is all Steph.
Yeah.
And they have a synergy offensively. And a synergy defensively, it just, look, all of it's 30. All of it is Steph, right? None of this happens without Steph. But the Warriors are not the Warriors without Draymond, which is also why they have a very interesting offseason coming up, especially with the more punitive tax apron stuff coming. So, and Draymond can opt out. So I think there are going to be changes there if this continues to go like it has been going. I just, I said this on Twitter and got roasted the other day during the game. It was like before halftime when it was still, you know, in doubt. I said the Kings have a 0.0% chance of winning this series. But what it has shown is all of those issues that the Warriors had during the regular season are real. And maybe there isn't a switch to flip.
Yeah.
So again, like, I still think the Warriors are going to win the series. But, like,
they have even to win with tonight, that said, or tomorrow night, whenever they play.
It's tonight. Or it's, you'll know the answer to this.
As oh, my God, dude.
And it overlaps with the Clippers Suns. What is the NBA doing? It's 7 and 7:30. I don't remember which one's which, but it's 7 and 7:30 last night. You'll know the answer to both of these.
Like, part of this is created because, like, it's four teams from the same state that are all in the playoffs, and, like, to a certain extent, there's going to be over five teams?
The Lakers.
Kings, Dubs.
Four teams from the same state. You're saying Phoenix. I thought you were including Phoenix. I thought you were saying the division. It's five teams from
state.
The division.
I meant
Pacific time zone. Phoenix is sometimes in the Pacific time zone and sometimes not.
Adam Silver isn't good at this, but like I
yes, by the way, I do agree with you about I did not think he was going to get suspended. I don't think he was going to get suspended. I don't think he should have been suspended.
Can I give you my tinfoil theory?
Yeah.
I think
you know Shams tinfoil hat Anthony is my favorite Anthony.
Yeah. So Shams comes out and says that people close to Draymond don't think that he's going to be suspended.
Yeah, I don't think it was people close to Draymond. I think it was sources.
But he said he did, like, either sources close to Draymond or close to the Warriors, like, you know, to that side of things. Mm-hmm. Don't think that Draymond is going to be suspended. And I think without that report, I don't think Draymond gets suspended. Like,
maybe.
I think, like, that brashness of, like,
that with how he went off the court and riling everybody up.
I think that, like, I think he might have been able, and if he goes post game and says, like, that was stupid, I shouldn't have done that, whatever. if he, like, basically the way he handled it, every step along the way
poorly
led to him getting suspended.
Yeah, no, very poorly. But none of those things are grounds for suspension. You're right. You're probably right.
Yeah.
But in the fact that Adam Silver was, you know, whatever, in the fourth row, like, that's, you're right. The optics of it are bad. You're right. But none of that is grounds for suspension. And
stomping on a coworker is probably grounds for suspension.
No. That's why he got ejected. He served the penalty for that. He got ejected and probably cost the Warriors the game. He got ejected. There you go. He served that. Sabonis, whether you think that was adjudicated fairly or not, he served a punishment. He got a T, right? The Warriors get a free throw. Draymond gets a flagrant two and gets ejected. There's the punishment. The extra stuff on top of it, the suspension on top of it. And if you want to fine him, fine. The extra stuff on top of it. If you want to fine him for conduct detrimental, like because he didn't leave in a timely fashion.
Yeah.
He didn't like flip anybody off. He was riling up the crowd and trying to get his guys to win one for him. I think especially because of how like competitive this has been, the most competitive and
it's been
like,
the best
fun
series.
Like it's been the most dramatic, all of that. And this is the defending champs on the ropes, which you want to see how are they going to respond. And it is the team of the decade, the Warriors. And you're also like kind of taking something from the Kings. The Kings have beaten them twice, right? I think the officiating has been slanted towards the Kings, but that's not why the Kings beat them. The Kings beat them because the Warriors tricked off games on the road like they've been doing all year. And the Kings have been better in the two games. So it's also taking away from like we're sitting here doing, we're talking about Draymond. We're not talking. That's what everything nationally is happening on TV. And it's not just like, wait a second, maybe we should be paying attention to the Kings. So I also don't like it for that reason is if the Kings end up winning the series, there's always going to be that asterisk like, oh yeah, you won because Draymond got kicked out of one game and suspended for another one. That I don't like about it either.
Okay, but like to that point, don't stomp on people.
No, sure. Absolutely.
Like, if I was a Kings fan and somebody like if somebody said like, see, there's an asterisk on this because he was suspended, it's like, hey, maybe the fact that the Kings played so well and frustrated him to the extent that he stomped on people was actually kind of a credit towards the way the Kings are playing. And towards the way that
or he just got sick of Sabonis trying to put the Kurt Angle ankle lock on him. I mean, and this
I've seen Draymond himself grab somebody's leg a lot worse than that.
But you know, if you look at what the NBA, like former players and current players have been saying about this publicly, is all in support of Draymond. It is all like, you, that is something you, that like you just don't do, like grabbing somebody's ankle, you like, and twisting it and like falling into it like that, you just don't do.
Yeah.
He also, by the way,
we've also seen that before, and those players not get stomped on.
No. I'm not telling you that Draymond handled it anything other than poorly. Of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I also don't like the minimization of Sabonis's role in this. I think that's problematic. But
problematic.
Yeah,
I
think it's problematic.
Like socially problematic. You're going that far.
I think it's problematic.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting, because
every NBA player on Twitter is like, no. Sabonis is the problem here. Like, what he did, you do not do. And Draymond did react to it.
I think there's a lot going on socially there too, though, right? Like, if we...
No, Yusuf Nurkic was like, don't Sabonis, you do not do that.
I mean, Yusuf Nurkic,
is a clutch guy, I think, also.
Yeah.
I think he is, yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to touch all of that, because I think there's a lot. If you are going to touch it, fine. If we want to go there, fine. I think generally speaking, and we've talked about this before with like how people talk about like No Bag Twitter talks about Giannis, and how, segments of the NBA talk about Jokic, and the way that Dirk was held for a long time, and the way that Powell was held for a long time. Like there is like a, if we want to talk about the classification of players, that is a part of it. And I think like the result, the response from NBA players, and Nurkic is kind of the outlier here, but as you mentioned, there's an agency thing, might be playing a role in this.
Dame was very vocal about it too.
And so like, I think part of that is like, you know, kind of riding for the American player here. I think that might be playing a role. And look, like there are unwritten rules that like, you know, that you just don't do. And I totally understand NBA players or athletes in particular, the ankle is a very fragile area of the body. It doesn't take very much to tweak that or whatever and change the way that somebody is forced to play moving forward. But I also think that like this idea that I personally, the way that I saw the way that Domas did went down, I didn't see him grab specifically at Draymond's ankle. I saw him hold his hand up to his face, and maybe it's a trick that he did to like, by putting his hand up by his face, it did just kind of grab at the ankle, and that was him like me falling for a trick that he pulled, and that's fine. That's altogether possible.
Go watch it again. Why was he on the ground to begin with?
Well, Biggs fall.
Yeah, like, and he tried to pull, I think, and by the way, he tried to pull Clay down with him. He grabbed Clay's jersey and tried to bring Clay down.
Yeah, and look, if we want to talk about Biggs falling too much, like I think the way Embiid falls is bad. I think the way that AD falls sometimes is bad. Like I think generally speaking,
AD falls like legitimately though, like it's too much and it's weird, but Embiid, it's so obvious. You know what?
I think that's bad for the league. Like you and I have talked about, I don't know if we've talked about it here on the show, but we've certainly talked it off the air. I think the NBA is too soft. Like there's too much flopping. There's like, you have the biggest people on the planet getting knocked over all the time by contact that like gets laughed at in hockey.
7'19", 612 pounds, and he's on the ground 15 times a game.
Right. And it's from contact that football players laugh at, hockey players laugh at. Like it is contact that like in an
Allen
era
Iverson
where
would truck him in practice, apparently.
Yeah. Well, but like you look at
6 foot, 5'11", 6 foot, 148.
He's 5'10. I've been in the same room as Iverson, and he is 5'10". He is my height.
Small. Yeah. He's definitely smaller than me.
And so I think in this era where we've seen MMA grow like crazy, football continues to grow like crazy, hockey is growing and stuff, and the NBA is growing, at least in terms of general revenue that gets spent on the league or whatever. But like the league needs to kind of bulk up a little bit. Like all the flopping, all that stuff is I think legitimately bad for the perception of the NBA. Every single person that I talk to, who talks about like why they don't watch the NBA, they all point to the flopping. All of them.
Black people.
No, well, like they watch football, you know, like they like, you know,
they like, don't like Lamar Jackson.
Well, look, there's a lot going on there, you know, fair. And look, I think that's it. I think that's a factor too. But all of them say,
I mean, that's
they're too
why
soft. That, there's too much flopping. It's like, it's why Americans don't like soccer either, because every correct. Single time somebody gets slide tackled, they go down and act as if their foot's going to fucking fall
yeah,
off.
Like they got
and no,
shot.
Like nobody likes watching that. Nobody likes watching that. And then in the NBA, you have that going on with even bigger people, like people who like, if I was to have a collision with anybody on a basketball court, anybody, point guards and up, I would walk away and maybe not walk away. I would be short for a week from any collision.
Isaiah Thomas would run you over.
Yeah, like all of those guys, they are actual Avengers that we're watching play out there. And yet they're flopping as if they're getting shot on any little contact that happens from people who are fractions of their size. I'm sorry, like in this era where it's really clear that the American, you know, people in American culture, we like physicality. We like blood sport. And like we're watching these guys who are legitimate superheroes like act as if they're dying. I'm sorry, it's just not good for the league. At some point the league is going to have to fix that.
So, I want to be clear.
I felt good.
I am not in no way am I excusing what Draymond did. He was wrong. I just the focus on him solely and not on Sabonis at all is the point I'm making. But I'm not excusing any of Draymond's actions at all. I don't think he should have been suspended. It's fine that he was ejected. So I'm not suggesting that like whataboutism, like, oh, this is Sabonis. He started it. He did. But like Draymond still did what he did, chose to do what he did and didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like the conversation or it feels like Sabonis is getting excused. And that bothers me. Draymond should be
excused punished. Is too far. I think excused is too far. Like, I don't think the on-court punishment met the on-court crime, though, I think is how I would phrase that.
Fair. But, I mean, no, I'm talking about the because Draymond ended up getting suspended, that has been the entire conversation. And we've lost, like, hold on, there's another dude that was also, that was not great either. So I think they were both wrong, is the point. And I think that has been lost.
So if Draymond gets suspended and Domas gets fined, would you be okay with the result?
No. Okay. No. Draymond's missing a game and whatever. So I think that Sabonis should have been either ejected in that game or suspended for this game. Because what he did was not as egregious as Draymond. I will grant you that. But without him, none of this happens, right? He instigated the incident. He started it. And I think... a technical foul, I think, does not fit the crime. So Draymond's going to miss a game in, you know, what, 4.5 quarters. And you could argue lost them game two because of the Warriors lost game two because of that. So I do not think Draymond missing 4.5 quarters and the Kings getting 2 free throws and the Warriors getting 1 free throw and Sabonis not missing any time. I do not think that is an accurate representation of the incident.
Yeah, that's fine. I
and because of that, the narrative is only about Draymond. And I'd be like, wait a second. Sabonis is like, that was dirty. I'm not saying he's a dirty player. I do think he is a dirty player, but I'm not suggesting that specifically was dirty.
Can I loop back to something as it pertains to the Lakers before we get out of here?
Please.
I think the Lakers miss that physical bordering on dirty player. I think they need that presence, you know, whether it was Dwight before, whether it was Markieff before, whether it was Boogie for a little while, like they pick up Tristan Thompson. He's not going to play or anything like that, but like,
no, Tristan's not like that anyway though.
Yeah. But
you're talking about an agitator.
Yeah, well,
somebody who's going to make the other team uncomfortable.
Yeah, like uncomfortable because you don't necessarily know when that dirty play is going to happen. It's going to happen. Like at some point, like Dwight Howard, at some point in all of these.
You don't want you don't want an actual dirty player. You don't want Grayson Allen. You want somebody that's
No, that's very different.
Yeah.
No, like I mean, I don't mean dirty.
You want Draymond.
Yeah, well, I don't mean
on the edge, and it that concerns the other team.
Yeah, like at any moment, Dwight would get a rebound, and he would stick his elbows out, and those elbows could decapitate somebody, and there was a concern for anybody running.
He turned the series against Denver because Jokic, he made Jokic so uncomfortable in the bubble. Jokic wanted no part of Dwight just because, like, the physicality and the effort and the ribbing and the trying to punk you and over, Jokic wanted no part of that.
And there was also back during the Kobe Powell years, there was a series against Houston that Houston was playing pretty well, actually.
You're talking about Artest?
No, well, when Artest was on the Rockets, but I think the play that turned that series was Fisher cold cocking Luis Scola. and that's not just me also. Like, Trevor Ariza has been asked about that, and he says that that lit a fire under the rest of the Lakers, that, like, hey, yeah, they're playing a little physical, all this stuff, but Fisher sent a reminder to everybody out there, Lakers and Rockets, no, that's not going to stand. We are going to be the aggressors here. And you want
Andrew Bynum clotheslining JJ Barea?
Well, no, because that was
148.
The series was already over when that happened. Yes. Like, that was just like letting out frustration. But I mean more like productive aggression. And I think the Lakers, like, right now, the most physical player on the Lakers right now is LeBron. And I don't think that's a good thing. You know, I think you need somebody who the other team, like, Rui is built like that, but he's not that kind of a player. He's not going to go out there and start
Austin
something.
Austin is that kind of player, but isn't built like that.
Austin might have that mentality, but, like, yeah, nobody. My father-in-law was over when Austin, like, flexed after he made the three-pointer in game one. My father-in-law was like, nothing's happening to his arms. Like, is he flexing?
That's funny.
And so, like, the Lakers, I legitimately think, and maybe this is me being like an older guy who watched the playoffs growing up, but every single playoff team that had success there had at least one of those guys who were willing to kind of muck it up. And the other team was always a little nervous about the physicality that they brought to the table, yeah, right?
You're talking about the Draymonds, PJ Tucker.
PJ Tucker was, yeah, exactly. And the Lakers, I think this offseason, are going to have to find somebody like that who gets minutes, right? Like somebody who, you know, somebody who's willing to go out there and mess around and occasionally, you know, put a toe over the line of physicality and dirty, you know, go out there and at any moment
can do that. Draymond.
You don't want to go full Draymond. No, you know.
No.
I don't know. How do you feel about that? Because I brought that up with you and Harrison, and you guys kind of, like, you know, whatevered about it. But I think that's something that the Lakers are really missing.
So here's the problem with that, and I don't disagree with you conceptually. The problem with that, though, is it's hard to find those guys that can actually play. Mm-hmm. And if they can't play and won't play, it doesn't matter, right? Because you have to be a guy that is out there enough, and, you know, to have you can't rally your guys from the bench, right? You can't come in. This is not like Marty McSorley protecting Wayne Gretzky, where he's like not really playing and just comes in to, you know, be a goon and knock somebody
every
out.
He was on the ice. He was like, all right, who's he hitting?
Don't touch Wayne Gretzky because here comes McSorley and he's going to knock you out. So it has to be somebody that plays enough that, like, you have to, like, to lead a team, you have to play. Unless you have so much history, like Andre Iguodala is one of the Warriors leaders, but he's been there forever. And he's a vet. So it's hard to find, especially because most likely UD. Any new guys that come in are going to be mid-level exception or minimum guys. And so to find a guy that has some of that and can play is a tough ask. I don't disagree with you, but I think it's just going to be hard to find. And they generally got to be a big guy.
That's why I would have...
Like, Steve Blake is that dude. I promise you, Steve Blake is that
dude. Steve Blake was a crazy person.
Steve Blake is that dude. But he's also, you know, a 6'3", 190-pound point guard. So...
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's where... you know, it's going to be interesting. I don't think Bamba will be a Laker next year. I think they actually use that non-guaranteed contract to bring in somebody else. But yeah,
how about this? I would be surprised if he's just not guaranteed. I would be surprised. I think there may be efforts to trade him. I suspect there will be.
I see what you mean.
But I do not think that he'll just be waived.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't help. Right. There's no there's no reason to. Unless you're gonna all of the guys you're just gonna get rid of. Because otherwise if you piecemeal it, there's no benefit to it because you're not getting any cap space.
Well, here's the one thing that I've been thinking about a lot is because I think Rui has earned himself a pretty significant payday. I think Reeves has earned himself a pretty significant payday. Yeah. And if the Lakers run up close enough to that new apron that is going to be in the CBA.
It doesn't go into effect until the following year.
Okay, but they would still, like, if you pay enough of those guys, right, like, into next year too, which they would be.
Oh, got you. I understand. Okay, yeah, got you.
Like, I would kind of wonder if he becomes a cap casualty for even the upcoming season after this one because of the paydays. Because, like, Reeves, I think, you can make a real case for like 13 mil a year, I think, right? What's Poole got? What did Poole get?
What did Jordan Poole get?
Yeah, he got like 30, close to 20, right?
No, he got 30
a year?
33, yeah.
A year?
Yeah. It hasn't kicked in yet. It kicks in next year. Yeah. Poole got the same thing.
Oh man, what a disaster.
Poole got the same thing as Tyler Hero and Anthony Simons. Yeah. He's like 4-120 something.
Oh my God, that's terrible. Oof.
I mean, he has not been great this year. And
yeah.
the first two playoff games, he's been awful. He's also supposedly hurt, but
yeah.
You know, he was useful in the playoffs last year. So
yeah.
It's not great. It's not great.
If Poole is going to be 30, then certainly Reeves is 15 at least. I think Reeves is just a better player than Poole anyway, but like I think Poole's younger. And I think so like Reeves goes from, you know, what he made this year, one and change to like 15. And then Rui is already at like 8 or 9 mil, right, on his rookie deal.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that's probably going to double, being a 3-and-D wing. And, you know, there you're talking about 16, 17 mil as well. You add that to the max contracts that you already have in LeBron and AD. You have, I think, D'Angelo Russell's making like 30 this year, right? I don't think he's going to be taking too big a pay cut. Like, I would imagine he's going to be close to at least 25, I would say, right?
If he would take 4 for 25 or 5 for 25, then it would have happened already.
Yeah, that's true.
Well,
it
couldn't have been 5 because he would be signing an extension. So it would be four for 100? Are you kidding me?
I wonder if they could convince him, like, by giving him an extra year at 25, if he would take 125 over 5 instead of, like, 30, you know, 120 over 4.
I doubt it.
Yeah. And look, like, you know, his market, he kind of has the Lakers over a barrel. Like, you know, they can't let him walk for nothing. Because they're going to be over the cap, as you know, given the numbers that we just talked about. So, like with Bamba, I kind of wonder, given all of those numbers, you know,
and Beasley, by the way,
I kind of wonder if one of Beasley or Bamba just become a cap casualty there. I would hope not, you know, just in terms of asset allocation or whatever. But it, you know, given the state of the numbers as we kind of perceive them to be right now. I could kind of see it with Bamba, but we'll see. I personally like the idea of extending him at, like, you know, for another year at 10 mil or whatever, just because $10 million expiring contracts are really valuable.
Well, you
come deadline.
You just pick up his guarantee. You don't extend him.
Right. No, that's what I mean. I like the idea of picking up the guarantee and having him on a $10 million expiring next year, because those are really important for stacking purposes at the deadline, especially if the Lakers don't use their first in this upcoming, or the extra first in the on like draft night or something. So yeah, I you know, we'll see. I hope that they don't do that, but given the numbers, I'm kind of preparing myself for that potentially. We'll see. All right. I think we've wandered and meandered plenty. I think so. The next time that we talk on this feed, Raj and I might have a recap live Saturday night. We'll see on that front. And then at the very least, though, we will be back on Sunday. So again, thank you everybody for tuning in over the course of the week and over the course of our time here with Blue Wire. Shouts to you guys. The reviews are up. The 5-star reviews are up. The mailbag is steadily filling up every week when I go to it. I saw that we jumped into the iTunes 200 for sports.
We love that.
For reviews and just general growth. So thanks to you guys for that. If you haven't already, I hope you guys check out the conversation that Aaron and I had on Substack last week. And subscribe on YouTube. Go to YouTube, search Lakers Lounge, and all of that stuff is there as well. So again, thanks everybody here. Thank you, Aaron, for hopping on. I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Aaron Larsoul. This was The Lounge. I wish you would have said, I'm just fluffing. Like, not just
I am fluffing my hair because I was noticing how glorious your haircut looks. I'm getting one at 1 o'clock this afternoon.